Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
If you follow certain pro-life organizations on social media, you may have seen a few of these incidents. Attacks on Roman Catholic churches, crisis pregnancy centers, vandalism, sometimes firebombings by pro-abortion activists. Why is this not being written up on a regular basis in the media? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about media coverage of pro-abortion attacks on Roman Catholic churches and crisis pregnancy centers, Clemente Lisi. He's former editor at the New York Post and the New York Daily News and senior editor at abcnews.com. He teaches journalism at the King's College in New York, and he's a contributor to Get Religion. Clemente, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Although I have heard of a few, why didn't I know that there have been more than 40 attacks on churches and crisis pregnancy centers since the leak of the draft opinion in the Dobbs Supreme Court decision?
Yeah, no, it's a very good question, and it's a question many have asked me as well. Why don't I know about this? It's because the mainstream media, the national press, has not covered these in a way that typically journalists would cover a trend piece where, you know, the joke used to be if you can find two or more people doing something, it's a trend story, or there's two or more incidents, it could be part of a trend. And there's been 41 of these around the country since the early part of May. They're all scattered across the country. Whether they're connected or not is sort of where the journalism should be taking place, and it's not, unfortunately. And I think part of that is because there's been a lot of rhetoric on social media and a lot of threats made to Catholic churches and other centers. And maybe it's possible that some in the mainstream don't really want to pull up a scab too much to find out who's behind some of these or who at least is inciting them. Because a lot of this is happening on social media, and that it is then potentially happening then in real life with these incidents around the country.
Describe some of these attacks.
Yeah, there's been, you know, there was one really high-profile case that happened really early on in May after the draft decision came out. It was in Brooklyn, New York, where I live. This $2 million tabernacle was stolen out of a church. The host desecrated all over the place. It was considered a theft. Whether it's a hate crime, it remains to be seen. But that was high profile given the, you know, the high value of the tabernacle. Another tabernacle was stolen around the same time in Texas and then later found abandoned in a parking lot. Again, the communion hosts were scattered everywhere. And there had been threats made on social media where this would be happening, where the idea that Roe could be rolled back, some groups then made threats to say that we're not going to let Catholic churches sort of rest easy. Because as we know, the Catholic Church has been on the forefront of this 49-year battle. And so this could be a result of some of that very tense, as you know, we live in a very tense, polarized time. And it takes a few journalists to connect a few dots. It would be nice. It isn't happening. And so what ends up happening is these events get covered in the Catholic press, or they get covered on Fox News, and then they become, to the left, a right-wing talking point. But it's still a legitimate story that is unfortunately being ignored.
How would you describe the news coverage that has been given to these incidents?
So the news coverage has been, I want to say, very good on the local level. So if this happened in your local parish or your local diocese, the local TV station, the local paper has covered it, right? Like anything else. But on a national level, the connecting of these dots, as I mentioned earlier, isn't happening. So coincidence or not, it is the role of a journalist or journalists, especially national press, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, USA Today, the major networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, they know these are happening. Because if you're on Twitter all day, you do see these incidents, right? A lot of national press get their news from local press, right? And it's this trend piece that on this particular case isn't happening. So the coverage has been, I don't want to say poor, it's been non-existent. That's the issue. There isn't any coverage. I want to say in the past 4 or 5 days, there's been a little bit of coverage in that it's starting to get to people's attention. People are talking about it. And I want to say the reason for that is because it comes on the heels or comes in the midst of someone being arrested for threatening the life or trying to assassinate Justice Kavanaugh. And that story got very little coverage as well.
You say that you're not surprised that major media outlets have largely ignored these events. Why aren't you surprised?
I'm not surprised. My fear is that, unfortunately, we live in a more partisan press that isn't objective anymore. And so for the longest time, newspapers and TV stations lived on advertisers. Now newspapers are living mostly on subscribers, and subscribers want to hear echo chamber. They want to hear what they want to hear. For example, the Kavanaugh assassination attempt happened around the same time as that first January 6th hearing. And if I know the New York Times, like any other newspaper, their page one was already set for that day. This was going to be the big story. It was the big story. To have that page one shared with someone trying to assassinate Justice Kavanaugh, an activist of the left potentially, right, or a madman, we don't know, would kind of counter the narrative that they have, right, which is democracy is in peril, the threats are coming from the right. If we lived in an objective press period, we could have both, right? But we live at a time when too many editors and journalists come from that Northeast New York, D.C. corridor. They live in blue zip codes. And I think that they really believe the threat is coming from one side, not the other. And so the other gets ignored. As a result, the best coverage of this has really been in the Catholic press, where they've covered these individual cases, but then also tied them together as what could be the cause, right? Ask the questions.
Tell us about the organization Ruth Sent Us.
So it's interesting. It's an interesting group. I had not heard of them until last month, but they're named after the now deceased Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it's an organization that on their website espouses a lot of progressive talking points, including Black Lives Matter, pro-abortion group. But they've become very famous in the last few weeks for protesting in front of the justices' homes, six conservative justices in D.C., in the D.C. area. But they have no qualms about posting on Twitter and other social media and TikTok the home addresses of these justices and then encouraging people to go there, which has been, you know, a contentious thing in Washington. Most Americans believe, obviously, in the right to protest. But to encourage people to go to their homes, follow them around, the latest was they were encouraging this past week to go to Amy Coney Barrett's home in suburban Washington, to go to her church, to harass her, to bother her. And the issue with that isn't that we don't live in a country where we don't believe in protest. The issue is that the leak is a draft decision. And so the main concern here could be this case is not decided yet. And so all this activity over the past few weeks is potentially dangerous because it may, people may change their mind or they may be afraid, or it may contaminate whatever the justices are doing, deliberating, which should be in private, which no longer is now, because in the last few days, I know from friends I have in the journalism world, they're waiting for the decision. The decision will come in the next days, weeks, but it will come by the end of June. And so every day there's this mobilization, this readiness to report on this decision. And if it goes according to the draft, you know, my Get Religion post talked about how this could be a template for more violence to come in the summer.
That's what I'm curious about. What do you think these events now indicate about future crimes possible following the overturning of Roe v. Wade?
I mean, there's no denying that there are people, you know, whether these organizations are encouraging violence or not, you know, they're very careful in their wording, but it's the lone wolf, the person at home watching on the news or on Twitter, someone who's unhinged who may go out and commit a crime like this. That's why this trend is an unusual one, in that I'm not saying there's one group behind all these attacks. I do believe that a lot of them are perpetuated by individuals who may hold a grudge against the church for whatever reason. But the media coverage can definitely encourage people to act, right? And we saw this 2 years ago in the summer of the racial reckoning in 2020, where it was a chicken or egg, right? What came first? Was it the civil unrest or the coverage of it or the lack of coverage of it, right? So I foresee that we may go through a period similar to that one if the decision doesn't go the way certain people want. And I think a lot of churches, I reported this earlier in the month too, was that they're hiring security guards, they're installing cameras. A lot of churches are afraid that their sanctuaries will be destroyed, their statues will be the faith. There's a lot, been a lot of vandalism, a lot of graffiti, and a lot of these churches don't have a lot of money. A lot of them are going through tough times post-pandemic. Church attendance is down and has been going down for a while, decades. So a lot of churches find themselves in a really precarious state, and the lack of news coverage of it doesn't highlight the issue for most Americans. Most Americans form opinions based on the news they read, and based on that information, then can come up with thoughts about an issue. But a lot of people I know don't even know this is happening, and that's sort of the sad part of it all.
What do we know about Americans' trust in the news media?
We know that Americans' trust in the news media has declined massively. It was at its peak, according to various studies, including Pew, in the Watergate years, where hordes, a new generation of people wanted to become investigative reporters. It was the heyday of television journalism, the heyday of newspapers. That has slowly eroded, I would say, around the year 2010, particularly with the growth of the internet, the smartphone, media companies, news organizations are struggling to make money. As a result, many of them have departed from being objective to being more partisan, sort of to preach to the choir attitude, as opposed to let's make everyone happy and let's try to cast a larger net as possible, because that's how we make our money. Advertisers want the largest audiences. The internet has really caused us as a people in general, but newspapers and media companies in particular, to become very niche, to become very targeted, so very targeted audiences. And so if you're on the left, you're going to subscribe to the New York Times. If you're on the right, you might watch Fox News. And unfortunately, people are not, there's no Venn diagram. It's getting much, much smaller. So people just will go to gravitate to the news organization that gives them what they want. So if they don't want to read about the Kavanaugh assassination, or they don't care about it, then they'll read the New York Times. And, you know, if you're a Fox News viewer, you might not want to watch the January 6th hearings, and Fox News did not air that first night. So we're going to a point now where these organizations are making editorial decisions based on what their audience wants, as opposed to what they should get, which is a very different. For anyone older than 35, you know what I'm talking about.
You say that the lack of news coverage around violence and vandalism at out-of-favor churches and nonprofits is both dangerous and disappointing, dangerous even to journalism itself. How so?
Well, it's dangerous because, call me old school, but the only real purpose of journalism is to inform people and to let them know what's happening in the world. And to slant news, to put opinion in news, this has always been a struggle. But to totally omit something, to not report something, to ignore it, is dangerous because it will persist and may encourage others to do so, and really departs from the whole point of journalism. If it is to inform, it is to learn about something you didn't know was happening, not to raise even more questions. I think that's both disappointing and dangerous.
Finally, you just mentioned the lack of a Venn diagram. As Americans have retreated into what are essentially media silos and echo chambers, why is even-handedness and consistency in journalism all the more important?
You know, the question kind of gives the answer away. It's more important because I think, and this the real issue with this is tied to politics, right? I used to have an editor at the New York Post that always told me, hey, you know, there's no Republican or Democrat way to fight a fire or to cover a fire, right? If it's an accident, you cover the fire and it's a basic news story. But when we enter the political realm, it becomes very dangerous, I think. And it becomes, there's all this talk about our democracy being in peril. And you know, and we can argue about degrees of whether that's true or not, or how important that is. But it is true in the sense that the press in the United States has always really, for at least 150 years plus, has been nonpartisan, has been objective, and has given Americans a snapshot of what's happening. As opposed to, hey, I read The Nation, I read National Review, which are political journals. And now you can't tell the political journals apart from the New York Times page one, the Washington Post page one. And it's disappointing because I was trained and grew up in an era where striving to be objective was still the aim, to inform people, right? I think we don't give our audiences enough credit, or at least the media of today doesn't give the audience enough credit that they can come up with their own ideas, or their own opinions about something. News companies feel like they have to tell them what to think. And will there be a writing of the ship? Will there be some kind of pushback? There's been a little bit. You know, there's already talk at CNN to be less partisan. The Gannett News Service, which is a chain of newspapers, has informed their newspapers to put less opinion on their website and their newspapers, because I think they're seeing this, the audience erode. And I think they thought the quick solution was to give the audience what they wanted. It turns out maybe the audience wants objectivity. It wants to know what's happening as opposed to being told what's happening.
Clemente Lisi is a former editor at the New York Post and the New York Daily News and senior editor at abcnews.com. He teaches journalism at the King's College in New York, and he's a contributor to Get Religion. You'll find a link to Get Religion on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Clemente, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thursday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss social unrest and fatherlessness with Dr. Stephen Baskerville. And we'll continue our series responding to Roman Catholic proof texts, talking with Dr. Stephen Parks about apostolic succession. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
I am beautiful because I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
I am accepted because I'm a part of His family through Jesus' shed blood.
Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis, Illinois, shines the light of Christ in one of the most impoverished cities in America. Learn how to support their mission work at unityesl.org. Unityesl.org.
Today, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I say yes to God in His ways.
The third commandment teaches us to remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. We do this when we hold God's word sacred and gladly hear and learn it. Jesus invites the weak and heavy laden to rest in Him, our true rest, because His yoke is easy and His burden is light. This weekend, rest in Jesus as you hear His word and receive His gifts. If you are in Southern Illinois, you're invited to join Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt to rest in the grace of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Learn more at trinitymillstadt.org.